Bunker, right here in North Central Indiana, transmitting to the world. Sunshiny day. And what is it today? Oh, I got something else in the way of my Frank Silva Memorial clock here. April 16th, 2014. Still a full moon? Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful out there, but it's cool. We haven't got our warm weather back yet. I had to put the long pants back on. We're still at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And our In the Bunker phone line is 574-267-5036. That's where you can either talk to me or hear a short message and leave a message. But for a longer political message that's intergalactical, go to 559-670-1473. We're getting a lot of action up there. We're going to be working on another project here coming up, and that's something I think you'll really like, because it's going to be pretty much a research project. I have thousands of hours of audio tapes of history of this struggle with all kinds of people's audio and speaking on there. And it's going to take us quite a while to do this, but we're going to take all this cassette tape I've gathered together, and we've got it also in other parts of the country, and we're going to put them on MP3s and so forth, and we're going to make it available to you, probably for a $5 a month extra charge or something like that. But to sort of give you an example, I've dug out a little talk from my great friend and deceased Robert Miles of Choctaw, Michigan, one of the wisest men that's ever been involved in this struggle. And I think it's apropos that I play this right now, because it's the same old stuff where people go out, get to drinking, or maybe even get into drugs, and then go out and do something that's going to cost them either their life on the streets or their life in prison. And so Robert Miles gave a little lecture on that, and I'm going to play it for you first thing today.
But because they were opposed to one of the drugs of the day that you have with you even today, liquor. The Volstead Act came into being 1919. The main effort of the Klan in those years was spent fighting the rum runners, fighting the booze and the effect it was having on our people. Now don't get me wrong, I'm no goody good. I've been able to drink some of the worst stuff they ever made in the Philippine Islands and still go on and run the radio for another 12 hours. But I also learned that what I could take in voluntarily, my body would reject ultimately because it couldn't handle it. It was a poison. And I'm going to tell you one thing. If you don't drink, you're better off. If you have to drink, lock the keys to the car, hide the robe, hide the uniform, put everything out of sight, and stay right in your room when you do it. That way, no matter what you say to the four walls, no matter what you point at a window, God willing, nothing happens. But I've gone through hell in the state of Michigan with people who mix drinking and guns and Klan robes. Now, I abhor violence, because I believe I can bring the thunder and the lightning from the natural sources into being by deep prayer and by the will. But I have never heard of a drunk yet that drew anything but trouble. And when a guy goes in a bar, he better leave the Klan robe at home, better leave the crooked cross at home, and everything else at home. Because the only thing he's going to draw out of the bar is more trouble. So the Klan fought liquor in those days, not because it was goody good, but because it was destructive of our own people.
Well, there he is, the late, great Robert Miles, giving you the word, giving you the word. And boy, I'll tell you, the prisons have a whole lot of otherwise good white people, white racial people, in prison because they mixed their racism with their booze, and it got them in big trouble. Some of them are doing life in prison. And of course, this Miller, who was a traitor from way back in the 90s, 80s actually, so he should never have been let back in the struggle at all. I've had all the information on Glenn Miller for years and years, and told anybody who wanted to hear it. So no one has got an excuse. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who has been running with Glenn Miller since the time that I put this information out and it was readily available, and order members put it out too, they're just as treasonous as he was, as far as I'm concerned. That's my opinion. Because when you get valid information on something that can be checked and double-checked, and then you don't listen, and you go the other way, even though you may not intend to, you're just as bad, you're just as much a traitor as the person who did the unloyal acts. Now, there's more to this Miles speech, and the webmaster is going to be putting it up on the website so you can download the whole thing. But this is an example of the tremendous amount of good information we have, that cases and cases and cases of audio cassettes that we need to go through and make MP3 files and so forth. So that's another big project. Like, I need another project. In case there's some people out there still claiming ignorance about Glenn Miller's treasonous activity towards the racial struggle, this is a note from one of our friends who was in Michigan, and it goes like this. In 1983, 84, and 85, we went to North Carolina to support Glenn Miller and the Confederate Knights KKK, and to Georgia to support the White Patriot Party. I never thought Glenn would have turned against the white and proud patriots, but once we found out from Pastor Miles, we ended our friendship with him in 1990. This bullshit murder spree did nothing but to make us look bad, and of course they love to do that. And innocent white citizens lost their lives for no fucking reason. Illegal. Illegal activities will not bring us any more associates. Don't let this garbage change your way of thinking. The white race must survive. But you must listen to your elders and people who have been through this thing and know where all the skeletons are, and quit ignoring the information they give you that can be checked out, not just taken at face value, can be checked out in the courts of law in the records. Now, Glenn Miller became at a certain point a federal FBI informant. People intimately familiar with an earlier case say Miller, founder of the KKK chapter and a white political party, should have been a prime suspect in those killings as well. There was a triple homicide down there in North Carolina. Instead, Miller became a star witness in both that murder trial and in a sedition case against 13 fellow white supremacists. I know I was in Fort Smith at that trial, so I saw it straight out. Glenn Miller was testifying against 13, including Pastor Miles and Pastor Butler and several other leaders, plus members of the order. Miller had proven himself to not be not so much a white separatist as a white opportunist when he found himself facing decades in prison on weapons charges in 1987. He said that a lead prosecutor threatened to pile on individual sentences of various charges until they totaled 200 years. Well, if you knew anything about the court, you'd know they always do that and make it sound like you're going to jail forever. That's just to get you to plead out like you did. Miller made a deal for just 5 years, and he would only have to serve 3. And along with that, he had to testify against all these other good people. Quote, I was to plead guilty on one count of felony possession of a hand grenade and answer all questions posed to me by the authorities, unquote. In other words, anything he knew, he was giving the FBI. Miller later wrote in his autobiography, quote, in return, they would recommend a 5-year prison sentence, immunity from any further prosecution by either state or federal authorities, and entrance into the Federal Witness Protection Program, which included the financial support of my family while I served my sentence. Just like a New York mobster. He added, a 5-year sentence sounded a little more palatable than 200, so I accepted. Again, if he's so stupid as to think he would have got 200 years for the crimes that he was accused of, it's ridiculous. Miller had a half dozen FBI agents for bodyguards when he arrived in North Carolina courtroom in 1989 to testify against Douglas Sheets, a junior member of the supremacist organization Miller created and led, the White Patriot Party. There was a lot to worry about him, defense lawyer Les Farfour recalls. Miller, Sheets, and other white supremacists named Robert Jackson had been hiding out in a house trailer in Missouri when they were surrounded by federal agents. Miller was on the run at the time, having absconded while appealing a conviction for defying a court ban against engaging in paramilitary activities. He had issued a declaration of war against the government and distributed a letter containing a hate crime hit list that offered various points for the killing of certain people. Even if you intend to do that, you don't make a list and hang it on the wall. Jeez. Quote, 888 for Morris D's, that's 888 points. Let's see here, 50 for influential Jews, race traders, politicians, and judges and informants. Well, if it's for race traders, he should have shot himself in the head because he was one. Government witnesses, 25 for abortionists, 20 for white race traders, there you go again, scallywags, carpetbaggers, and Jews, 10 for queers, 5 for assorted mongrels, and 1 for blacks. Oh, man. In the letter, Miller wrote, quote, ZOG, Zionist Occupational Government, will soon have my dead carcass, but I will die with contempt on my lips and a sword in my hand, unquote. He asked that his hand be extended in a Nazi salute when he was buried. Well, it looks like he's going to get his wish now. They're going to probably give him the needle like they did Tim McVeigh. But when the showdown came, the Fed, and probably he'd been drinking because he's been an alcoholic the whole time. But when showdown came, the feds needed only to administer a little tear gas to flush him and his two comrades from their trailer. In other words, all that bravado, they didn't shoot it out, man. The subsequent search resulted in weapons charges that individually could carry 20 years or more. Quote, inside the mobile home and in one of our vans parked outside, the feds found C4 plastic explosives, dynamite, pipe bombs, hand grenades, full automatic M16 and AR-15 machine guns, sawed-off shotguns, pistols, crossbows, and around a half ton of ammunition, to list some of it, Miller would write in his autobiography. Well, that's really something there, Glenn. He immediately offered to tell the authorities everything he knew about a white separatist organization known as the Order. Going to trade right away. He also offered to testify that he had overheard Sheets and Jackson talking about having killed three men in 1987 and an adult bookstore in Shelby, North Carolina. He said the victims were assumed to have been homosexual. 10 points each. I thought he said five before. They're going up. Miller's two comrades were tried separately, with Sheets going first. Miller testified as promised for the feds, but the prosecution's case unraveled after the defense attorneys checked out Sheets' alibi. Sheets said he had been in Kansas the day before the murders when a blizzard struck and he could not possibly have reached North Carolina in time to have committed the crime. The defense attorneys played videotapes of the Kansas news coverage of the big storm. The jury acquitted him. That called into serious question Miller's veracity as a witness. The defense noted that Miller had testified at one point about a two-way mirror at the bookstore, a detail he had not likely have known about unless he had been there, perhaps as one of the three mass killers. Blabbermouth. The prosecution dropped the charges against the other defendant, Jackson, in the bookstore murders. Sheets and Jackson did 20 years on unrelated weapons charges, the minimum that Miller would have received had he not made a deal. He certainly could have gotten considerable more. Miller also testified in a big sedition case in Arkansas against 13 of his fellow white separatists, including senior members of the order. Miller was convinced enough and likely even telling the truth when he testified that the leader of the order gave him $200,000 to finance the White Patriot Party. The cash was apparently from more than $4.1 million in robberies. Well, mainly from that Brinks robbery in Northern California, I guess. The order had committed one armored car heist, there it was, in 1984, had netted the group $3.6 million. That was corroborated by other evidence, but Miller undercut his credibility when he testified that he had turned informant not because he hoped to duck a heavy prison sentence, but because he had become a born-again Christian and was no longer a hater. And, of course, when he's arrested out here in Kansas the other day, he said he's an Odinist. So, that's sort of like the Bush crime family. His fellow informants were also less than convincing. The trial, like the one before, ended with a jury returning a not guilty verdict. The government witnesses were not believable, a juror said afterwards, and like I said, I was there when that happened. Maybe because Miller had done so little harm in court to his fellow white separatists, he soon after felt safe enough to leave the witness protection program, who was going to kill him as revenge for getting them acquitted. They took him back. I know a lot of guys like that, total flat out rats, testifying against people and everything else, and they take him back like a dog going back to its own vomit. This is why you got to get out of the right wing. Don't have anything to do with these organizations. And are you going to have anything to do with VNN now? I've never attacked VNN much before, I don't think. But I am now. Get out of there. You can do whatever you want. I'm not in the right wing, so it's your baby. If you're stupid enough to hang around that kind of a situation, then you get what you pay for. Miller went to work as a long-distance trucker and dropped all pretense of no longer being a hater. He made thousands of racist and anti-Jewish online postings that spouted more poison as he repeatedly ran for office for governor, at one point for U.S. Senate, at another. A blusterer who immediately turned informant at the threat of serious prison time seemed to imagine he was speaking of guys different from himself when he declared white men have become the biggest cowards ever to walk the earth. Maybe his own rantings aroused him to do more than talk. Maybe he could no longer bear the craven truth about himself. How can he look in the mirror? How could this guy look in the mirror? If the prosecutor had prosecuted instead of bargaining, Miller might still have been behind bars Sunday when the police say he shot and killed three people outside a Jewish community center thinking they were Jews in a nearby assisted living facility. Nothing could be more cowardly than to gun down three unarmed innocents, including a 14-year-old boy. Jeez. Miller is alleged to have acted alone, so the only person he can inform on this time is himself. He has no hope of getting a deal like the ones he never should have gotten in the first place. Well, this was written by an enemy operation, but for the most part, it's true. And if your enemy tells the truth, I've got no problem passing it on. But we knew this stuff years ago, and we used to, you know, Bob Miles and I and Butler, we used to scratch our heads and say, what the hell is that guy still around? He's still around. They've taken him back. Oh, man. The right wing? No wonder the progressives make so much fun of the right wing. They hate the right wing. They hate the serious people that may still be in the right wing, but boy, do they make fun of the so-called warriors in the right wing, man. Well, now the case is finally closed, except they'll have a big, long trial, and you're going to hear about him shooting down non-Jews and like that, and even Jews. I mean, what is the thing going out on the street and shooting down working class or senior citizen Jews? What has that got to do with this struggle? I mean, now that's all going to come out in a trial, and every day it's going to be bad white separatists. Anybody who doesn't like what Israel does must be involved in this, and anybody that's involved in racial activity is poised to go out and murder a whole bunch of people. That's what you're going to hear now, until he's finally put away, gets the needle or something. Well, now you don't think you've had enough today, and you haven't had enough to tear your teeth out and tear your hair out and beat your head against the wall? They don't call me terrible for nothing. I'm going to take you down to Australia now. Yeah. No, actually, New Zealand. We had another big right-wing leader in New Zealand. Yeah, you guessed it. He found the Lord again, and he's turning his back on white supremacy. And he did an interview here, and we're going to play it for you, and get a barf bag, because it's going to be pretty bad, okay? Well, wait a minute here. Hold it.
Supremacy in New Zealand, recently in the headlines promoting a whites-only community in North Canterbury. But if we're to believe Kyle Chapman, he's turned his back on his past. Love has changed Kyle forever. And what a turnaround. He got married in the Mormon temple in Hamilton on Friday. His best man was a Maori, the bride, a Mormon, who's done some missionary work. The interview you're about to see, he says, is his last before he attempts to escape his past. With his new bride, Claire Clifford, I caught up with them earlier today and began by asking Kyle why he agreed to the interview.
For me, it's mainly about being able to show a commitment to Claire, and that I'm, you know, wanting to move into another phase of my life, you know, which is that I want to follow a more God-focused life. And for me to be able to do that, then I need to be able to put it out there exactly what I want to do.
Congratulations on the wedding, Claire. Was it lovely?
It was lovely. Really nice.
I was watching you just now, and you love this man, don't you?
I do.
He was chewing gum, and you had a little plastic bag, and you opened it so that he could put his gum in there. And where have you put it? In your pocket?
It's over there.
You've got to love someone to do that, haven't you?
Yes, I do love him. He's a good man.
There'd be a lot of people that would say he isn't a good man.
Mm. Well, I understand the way that media works, and I understand the way that he works, so the two don't kind of mix. I think that some of the things that Kyle's been through is guilty by association. But I know this man. I've known him for 4 years, and he's been a good man. We've served together in the church. He's come along and he's dug gardens with me as a full-time missionary.
Did you ever read anything that he had done, and things he'd been involved in, and you'd thought, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know any more about that.
There was a couple of things that I read that I thought were a little bit alarming, but looking at the background that Kyle had and the drug problems from youth that had come through his family and things like that, and acquaintances especially in Christchurch, I kind of see that it's just an understandable, you know, behavioural of those sort of problems as a young man. But as you know, Kyle hasn't had drug problems or anything since he was 21. That's 17 years, and I think that's really commendable.
Your brother at the wedding said to us when we asked him about Kyle, said, he's a really nice guy until you Google him.
That's true. I have Googled him, yeah. Me and my friend sat around and we did that, and it was different. I think Kyle's looks and his mannerisms sometimes deceive the real person. And these are some of the things that we're going to try and work on as a couple so that we can actually do well and steer in a different direction.
Are you running away from your former life?
No, I don't feel like that at all. My purpose is to become a more family orientated man. That's what this change is about for me, is about following my interest in God.
Is it hard to do that though? Is it almost impossible to do that? Let's take the wedding. How many of your family were at the wedding?
No.
So how do you say, I'm turning over a new leaf, I want to be a better father, I want to be a better family man, and you have a wedding where none of your family are present?
But I mean, all that's geographical. I mean, if I could afford to fly all my family up from Christchurch to be there, that would have happened, but I don't have that kind of money.
Is it weird? You're sitting there at your wedding, no one from your family at all in the wedding, knowing a lot of those people there, your best man, a man that you really didn't know, were probably thinking, we've got to watch this guy. He seems all right now, but we've got to watch him because we know what he used to be like.
Well, I don't feel that.
No.
But you don't think, Claire, seriously, that these people who love you and who've known you for a long time are not worried for you?
Mm, they are worried for me, but that will be soon eliminated. You know, that worry will just go over the time, and that's about me just being an adult and making my own decisions. And I know that some of them are concerned, and I appreciate that totally, but at the end of the day, I know what I'm doing.
You said a few years ago, I will always be a nationalist until the day I die. Are you a nationalist?
I'll always have patriotic nationalist points of view. You know, that is a fact of life. The thing that's changed is how I feel things is important.
When you were with the survivors, right, you're in the bush training to look after yourself when Armageddon comes.
At the end of the day, it actually doesn't matter about physical survival. I've got to save my soul first.
Is this the woman you would pick up arms to defend? Because that's what you were talking about. You were talking about picking up arms to defend those close to you.
I still would do that, yes.
You also talked about retribution. Former prime ministers, charging them and if necessary hanging them.
The thing is that I like to...
So you're smiling now when I say that.
Because
you know you said those things.
Because I like to say things that...
Extreme.
I like to...
tease people.
Yeah, tease people.
So you never meant that?
No, why would I waste my time in a survival situation hunting down people that I just think are ridiculous to hang them?
Claire, is your husband racist?
No, he's not racist. Not one iota. One iota, but he is pro-white. Which is something different as well. Very strong patriarchal
does
view.
Does that sit comfortably with you though, pro-white?
No, because we're also pro-everything else. But when I look at that, I can just see that he is patriarchal.
Could you buy a house and live comfortably next to Asian immigrants?
We live by Marais. We've got Marais right around us. Actually, we've got two Marais just down the road within a mile. We go past them every day.
Your husband once admitted to arson at a Marai.
Yeah. I said to him, don't burn down the road, you'll be in trouble.
Would you still associate, do you still associate with some of those people with very hardline views?
Not right now.
So you would again?
I don't know, because somebody might come into my life in the future that is really seeking out some help. And again, I'm not going to turn away people that need help. I'm running away from a lifestyle. I don't want to be around the negative side of that lifestyle anymore.
Do you hate?
No.
Did you hate?
When I was a teenager and I was, you know, involved with gangs and those kind, you know, basically really negative lifestyle, I did believe in hate then. You know, I really believed that I hated my enemies but once I got into recovery at 21, then hate is no longer an option, because people who hate can't stay clean and sober.
If we came to see you at your first anniversary in 1 year's time, what sort of situation will you be in?
Hopefully. Love to have babies, have our family, and just have lots of fun.
There shouldn't be any problem there because you have five children.
Yes. He's very, what was the word?
Fertile.
Very fertile.
Then I have to look at you and say, by four different women.
Yes, yeah. I know. I think that's some of the effects of drugs and alcohol and bad decisions and bad parties. And apart from that, it's a little bit colourful. I just don't care because...
So what would you say to people watching now saying, naive?
Oh... I don't care. People are allowed to say what they want.
Well, there you go. Another dose of this stuff. Of course, it's intended, of course, to make everybody look bad in the press and so forth, and keep good people from wanting to get involved, from getting involved. This guy, did you catch it? He'd been in drug rehab, so he was obviously... I think he was running the National Front Party down there. So he had a drug habit, and he went into rehab. And I think that's where they got to him. And then the Mormons got to him. And to the point where his best man is a Maori Indian. And his new wife is bragging about Maori Indians living around them. Oh, jeez. Bragging about it, you know. Sometimes you can't help something like that, but he's bragging about it. And when they ask him about, does he have any of these views left? Oh, no, I'm worried about saving my soul. So there you go. Christ's insanity again. Over and over and over. And I think I caught that he'd been married to four women and had five kids. Or did I mishear that? Some about five kids. I think said four different wives. Oh, Jesus. Plus, he's about 100 pounds overweight, too. Whoopee. Come on, right wing. Just stick a gun in your ear and pull the trigger. Get out of our way. You know, I also get a lot of these emails from guys that supposedly are National Socialists and purport to be Jesus people. And one just sent me the deal about Jesus not being a Jew. Well, he was. If he had existed, he would have been a Semite, that's for sure. As those so-called Jews that existed in that area at that time were described by the Assyrians as a short, dwarfish, kinky-haired, swarthy-skinned people. So that's what Jesus would have looked like. But Jesus never existed. Go to JesusNeverExisted.com. You can get all the information there you want. Get it out of your system. Don't let religion waste your life away. There's plenty of ways to waste your life away without Christ insanity. Have fun, white man, white woman. Enjoy yourself. Because the struggle is in the future. It's coming. In fact, actually, the good life is to struggle from birth to death. Struggle is what's good for you. Being lethargic and sitting around and being lazy is bad for you. I wanted to comment a little bit about this bombing stuff that goes on. Some of these right-wingers think that that's the way to go. Well, I want to get across to you that as a tactic, if something doesn't work, why would you want to use it? If something helps your enemy more than it helps you, why would you want to employ that tactic? Timothy McVeigh came back from the Gulf War sickened by the carnage and the minor genocide that they inflicted on the Iraqi army. He was fed up with it. And then he saw this Ruby Ridge, and he saw the operation down there in Texas. Well, so he allegedly decides to build a bomb and plant it. Now, some people argue this and that and this and that, but I don't think there's any doubt that he planted something. And I think that maybe the feds might have enhanced the explosion, but I don't think that it's correct to say that he did not intend to blow up the Murrah building. But the intention was to get the attention of the people of the United States and the government, and the people would turn on the government and kick all the corrupt people in the government out. But that's not the way it worked. It worked totally in the opposite. So everything that Timothy McVeigh thought he was doing for some kind of overall good was really overall bad. He might as well have enlisted as an FBI agent or something, because blowing up the Murrah building didn't do one damn thing for white people. And if you think there was something it did positive for white people, let me know, because I've never been able to figure it out. Now, the IRA, remember the Irish Republican Army? As long as they were making individual hits on guilty people or people they felt were guilty, which culminated in the assassination of Lord Mountbatten on his yacht, they had a lot of support. They had a lot of support, and they had a lot of sympathy all over the place. But you remember when they went to bombs and started blowing up things and blowing up department stores in England and stuff like that? Their support dropped like a rock, because most people don't see bombing as a reasonable tactic in changing the system. Now, that's, of course, you can look at the federal government. They believe in that. They believe in flattening a country, flattening everybody with super bombing to get what they want. But I'm talking on a smaller scale. Look at all the bombing that's going on even after the Bush bombing in Iraq, and what is it gaining the nationalists and the patriot people in Iraq? Not a damn thing. Just, I'll throw one at you today and you throw one at me tomorrow. So, and we've seen a whole lot of guys in the right wing over the years that have been put away for planning to bomb somebody, you know. Now, if you'll see the movie, let me think if I can remember it. The original movie, the original Day of the Jackal, which I've always liked that movie because the man was after one person, and he was determined to get that one person. He wasn't out to hurt a lot of other people and bomb downtown London, all that kind of stuff, or Paris. He was after one person that he felt was guilty of crimes against what he believed in. Whether you agree with that or not, he wasn't going after other people. Now, this movie with Ben Kingsley I watched here about a week ago, I think you all should watch it, called The Common Man. And there's a guy where this movie, there were bombs employed, but there's a twist. You can get it at your local video store, A Common Man with Ben Kingsley. Now, Ben Kingsley is not an ideal white man, but in this film, I thought he was really a hero. And so, anyhow. But I have no truck with people who believe that they can change the system by planting bombs. Now look, Castro took power, but you see, the system was so corrupt it was crumbling anyhow. And I don't remember him attacking anything but military and police barracks in his revolution. I don't remember Castro, whether you agree with his communist ideals or not, I don't remember him attacking people on the street or planting bombs in neighborhoods or department stores. All I remember was he attacked army barracks and police headquarters and things like that. So you got to watch what you're thinking and watch who's talking to you. Look at Randy Weaver. Now, Randy Weaver never planted a bomb or built a bomb that I know of, but he allowed himself to be talked into cutting off two shotguns to the illegal limit. I mean, so many times our people just walk into this shit. I mean, if somebody come up to you knowing what you should know, if a guy pulled up in front of here and asked me, "You got a hacksaw, Tom?" "Oh yeah, I got a hacksaw." "Well, would you hacksaw my shotguns off to 14 inches? I don't think so. "Well, why?" "Well, 14 and a half inches, according to my understanding, is the legal limit. I think it's that way around the country, and I've got a commercially bought double barrel shotgun that's the legal size." And so why would you be so dumb as say, "Duh, yeah, I guess so. I'll go get my hacksaw." Or why wouldn't you say, "Well, you can hacksaw it off to whatever you want. I'm not going to be involved. You know how to use a saw. Do it yourself." So there's all kinds of deals like this that go on too. And then, of course, you know as well as I do that a good share of these so-called terrorist bombings that have been thwarted in this country since 9/11 have all been encouraged or set up by the feds themselves and Homeland Security. They get somebody that's pissed off that probably would never have done anything, and they keep agitating them and talking to them, maybe getting them drunk or giving them drugs, and pretty soon they got them into a conspiracy, and they give them some phony package, and they go do this and pull the string and leave it, and the whole place is going to blow up. And of course then the FBI swoops in like they did on the guy on Times Square, grab him and give him 100 years in jail. And everybody says, oh my God, you're wonderful, FBI. You saved us from these insane people. You saved me. Oh, you're wonderful. You're wonderful. Look at Germany, for example. They dropped hundreds of thousands of tons of bombs on the German population. But Germany didn't surrender because of that. Germany surrendered because the military ran out of oil. They would have been fighting on if they'd had enough oil. So they bombed Germany into dust. And its people were still fighting. So that's a good example there of why bombing itself doesn't work. And bombing has an odious thing attached to it. Remember Jesse James and what got him on his bank robbing career? You know, they threw a bomb into his mother's house and blew her arm off. I think she died from it too. Things like that can set people off to where they'll go off on a tirade and do whatever they have to do. You see, our weapon in this country, our weapon is corruption. Corruption is what eventually leads to eruption. And so there's not, you could plant bombs all day long around this country and things wouldn't change much. In fact, it'd get worse because the government would instill more and more fear psychologically into the people to where they'd want to have a company of Marines on every corner. So how would that put you in a better situation than you are now? So what you should pray for is more corruption. Agitate the right wing. They want to kill the left wing and the progressives, and the progressives agitate them. They want to kill the right wing. So let them do it. I mean, I'm not saying I can start it, and I'm not saying I can stop it, but they want to do it. Listen to them on late night radio. They hate each other with a passion you wouldn't believe. So I say, step out of the way. Let their corruption grow. And with every corruption, with maximum corruption, the empires deteriorate, just like Rome deteriorated. I was listening to a show last night where a guy was wrote a book about how rotten Wall Street was and how horrible and how nobody ever went to jail and all that. And I agree. But what's the most corrupt institution in the country? I think it's the military-industrial complex. Trillions of dollars is spent on guns and arms and bombs and poison gas and biological warfare, and they use it. Or they give it to other people to use. Now, you know, I don't understand, you know, progressives who want to take the guns away. We got too much crime in this country, let's take the guns away, when everybody should know that the government of the United States is the biggest warmongering institution that's ever been. More arms that have ever been. More atomic bombs that have ever been. More missiles, more everything. And we sell them all over the world and create wars all over the world, killing people. And then sort of makes even Glenn Miller look like a piker. It makes Timothy McVeigh look like nothing compared to these guys. And they've been doing it for a century. You know, once they got the airplane, they could really do it. Bomb the shit out of everybody. They're down there in Africa now. We've got Marines down there, and they're killing blacks. But yet the government says, we love black people. We love black people. But they're starving to death by the millions down there in Africa. And they're getting killed by these warlords at the military-industrial complex of this good old USA have armed them to the teeth. So anyhow, bombing itself doesn't change anything. In fact, it works just the opposite. And like I say, the IRA and people like that learned the hard way that it actually turned populations against them. There was nothing gained by the alleged right wing, by Timothy McVeigh blowing up that building. I mean, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. And for guys to get drunk like this traitor FBI informant Glenn Miller and go out in the streets and shoot down, get drunk and go out and shoot down three people that allegedly are not even Jews. I mean, but so what? I would never advocate going down in the streets and shooting Jews. Most Jews are just working class Jews, no matter what you think of their religion. They're not the big conspirators at the top. Why do we always think about the people at the bottom? Look at Germany, all those people that were dragged out of Germany. Those weren't the super rich Jews. Those weren't the bankers. Those weren't all the big shot Jews. They got out. Hitler let them out. They got on a train and left with most of their goods and everything else. But the working class Jews got drug off to get killed. I don't think 6 million, but a hell of a lot of them did. So anyhow, leave the right wing if you're still in the right wing. Get out of that shit and quit listening to these people that are spreading fear. And I get it every day. They're using Jesus as part of their pitch. And there's nothing gets me to dump a message faster than somebody who's coming at this thing from a Christ insanity point of view. Get out of these churches. Get out of these churches. Get out of the right wing and be your own man, be your own woman, be the lone wolf. And if the time comes when you have to kill to defend yourself or your family, or the deterioration of the empire gets so bad that there are military people running amok through the population, well, kill them. That'll be the time. That'll be the time. But it's not time. It's not time. And that's the end of my rant for today on Wotan's Day. Oh, one other thing on this racial thing. Most of the people who join racial groups were never really racist at all. They pretend or they act out that they're racist. A true racist separatist never changes. As long as he's not infected with Christ's insanity or something like that, he's not going to change. He may be less militant or more militant, but he doesn't change. You can't have an ideology that's so important as your race and just be in it for 6 months and say, "Oh, I changed my mind. I want to go back to being something else." No. These people were never really racist. They just put on the ideological mantle and walked around with it for a while, like Miller did it for years. And yet when it comes down to the wire, he kills his own. I'll be back with you tomorrow on Thursday. And if I didn't offend you today, by God, I'll do the best I can tomorrow.
That's what I call action.
14-5.